order. Thank you for coming so promptly. And today we're going to start the overview of the accounts that we have in our determination that have been assigned to us to determine their appropriations. But I also asked the people to bring their mission statements and their description of their duties, the expenditures that they have, the structure of their organization, and several other things. And they probably will want to share with us their history and what's happened over the years. And because of their longstanding history and their relationship to the whole state, and because they start with an A, I am asked the Amateur Sports Commission to be the very first. And so all the other groups that are going to come before us will have to use this as your finest example. Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, just one quick...
Representative Haas.
Thank you. Representative Haas sat in my chair, and he took my all my information with him, so if he could just pass over his information to me, we'd be okay.
Life is a bowl full of Larry's.
It is. I'll meet you halfway.
I appreciate that you're willing to work this out between the two of you.
So bipartisan.
It's a new era, you know.
If the pages would just sit us next to each other, it would be easier to transfer
stuff. Pages are sitting the way I did. However, if anyone wants to change, they're welcome to, with my permission. Mr. Erickson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Madam Chair, the Amateur Sports Commission is pleased to be your leadoff hitter today, and hopefully we followed your direction and have put together a handout that has everything from mission, org chart, and measurements of our activities. So if I could have a page, I have a handout for all of your members. And Madam Chair, one thing I might be a little short on is a list of our board members, because that's a very important part of our structure and our ability to get things done. So with your permission, there's a handout that is 7 or 8 pages long, and I'd like to point out that one of the reasons that the Amateur Sports Commission works and is successful is our board, which serves as volunteers, and they have a lot of business, sports background. And Joel Carlson serves on the board of the Amateur Sports Commission, and he's going to help me today with the last section of the presentation. The cover page is just the highlights about the commission's oversight of the National Sports Center, statewide amateur sports tourism, and the Stars and Our Games. If you go to page number one, you'll see the outline, and perhaps, Madam Chair, this could be an outline that other presenters could use. I tried to be a good student of listening to you and your staff on what you wanted. So let's go to page two, the mission. The mission of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission has stayed largely the same from Governor Perpich's vision. And I want to, I think it's important for a number of the new members who come to the legislature after Governor Perpich. As you know, Governor Perpich was a visionary with projects like the Mall of America, one that we believe is within the same vision, but not as much publicity as the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. In 1987, the state legislature founded the Amateur Sports Commission and recognized that amateur sports could serve two purposes for the state: provide more opportunities for families to recreate, but also use amateur sports as an economic development tool. And as a testament to Governor Purvis's vision, we were number 6 or 7 of sports commissions founded in the United States. Today there's a National Association of Sports Commissions with 400 to 500 members. So Minnesota was in the lead of this national movement. Our mission, number one, to create economic impact development through amateur sports. And that's by developing events, camps, and programs that draw out-of-state visitors to Minnesota by bidding for and getting big events. If you remember during the Purvis era, we had International Special Olympics, the U.S. Olympic Sports Festival, Final Four. At that time, some of you may not remember, state government appropriated large sums of money, $250,000 to track the Final Four, $250,000. As we know, those days are past, but they did produce a very important result for the state. We also assist Minnesota communities in developing sports tourism. Remember last year, we were before you recommending capital projects to help the regions of the state develop amateur sports tourism, like Moorhead, Marshall, Rochester, and Northeast Minnesota. Second goal is to create maximum opportunity for sports participation. One of the equal benefits, if we build a facility like the National Sports Center in Blaine that can draw out-of-state visitors, the equal benefit is that the millions of visitors from Minnesota who participate there receive a benefit. So there's always this dual benefit. As part of providing sports opportunities, we sponsor and manage a state Olympic Games called Stars North Games. You have a member of the committee that was involved in St. Cloud with the first official Stars North Games, Representative Hawes, who was the director of the recreation program in St. Cloud at that time. Second, we assist local communities with creation of events in their communities, and we support Minnesota's amateur sport associations. The third goal, which was a very big deal at the onset of the Amateur Sports Commission, was to develop Minnesota as a national model and to attract national team training in Minnesota. And, for example, at the National Sports Center in Blaine, the women's National Olympic Soccer Team has played more matches in Blaine than any other U.S. city. The U.S. biathlon team, the U.S. cross-country team, has had many visits at the Wabak. The national volleyball people have been in Rochester. And most recently, you may have seen the publicity, the U.S. women's Olympic hockey team has designated Blaine as their home. And if you drove up there later today, you could catch the U.S. women's Olympic hockey team. So one of our goals, in addition to economic development and opportunities for Minnesotans, is to, where possible, bring these Olympic teams into Minnesota. Now, I want to footnote, we have gone away from number three. This is typically very expensive, and with no or little resources to subsidize activity, it's much more challenging to do. Now, Madam Chair, we have a board that includes 6 legislative appointees and 11 gubernatorial appointees that the 3 staff on the org chart serve. In earlier years, we add up to 11 staff, so as you'll see in subsequent pages, that the budget of the Amateur Sports Commission has been trimmed and reduced over the years. So it's myself, an associate director who works on state games under project, and then our basic fiscal coordinator to manage the fiscal aspects of the agency. Now, if you want to go to the next page, and again, these were the specific questions asked by your staff. First of all, you asked, I'm going to concern our budget, did the agency receive any unallotment? And we're pleased to report that I believe the governor and Department of Finance treated all the small agencies currently without any reductions or unallotments. Now, the history of MSC funding, the chart, I think, tells the story that we were receiving up over $600,000 for several years, but in the last 6 years, we've been hovering around that $300,000 mark. And our recommendation to the administration was the continuance of the $300K. We were informed that the administration is looking at a 10% cut that we were asked to provide, and so our projection is 270 for the current year if we're treated like all of the other small agencies. I do want to point out that we do have a glitch that our base number is less than the 300, and we've struggled with that for several years, but you can see the consistency of the legislature's funding of the agency from 2003 to present is at the that $300,000 level.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Could you explain how you were asked to reduce the 10% reduction?
Yes. We, as a small agency, we were asked to reformat our budget back to the administration at 270 and ask what we would do. And our recommendation, and I think that budget documentation, I don't know if it was provided by finance to your staff. I have
not yet.
Okay, I think it comes out on with yes. the governor's budget.
Yes.
But we basically recommended that we would eliminate the interns and part-time staff that we've used in the summer, that there would be further reduction in board expense. Our board used to meet monthly, but had to be reduced to meeting quarterly, the board that we had up. And also, we're blessed with a number of members who understand the limited resources of the agency, and members like our super volunteer, Joel Carlson, who doesn't submit for per diem in order to help the budget. And I'd say a number of our members don't even submit per diem. And I do want to mention myself and other staff sometimes don't submit our travel expense if we drive to Rochester and back or Marshall, because in certain years we feel we don't have the resources. So we're all making contributions in subtle ways, and we probably would continue to do that if there was a $270,000 reduction.
So you don't submit, but do you record it?
It's never recorded. I just don't bother.
Gone?
Yeah, it's gone.
You probably should keep at least notations of that.
All right, Madam Chair, it's definitely still in my calendar, but you can see, I think you'll find if your staff looked at the record of amateur sports and expense submissions, there's probably been 6-8 month periods where there was no expense part submitted by myself in order to make the budget work.
Please go on. I'll try not to interrupt anyone.
No, that's fine. Page number 4, you asked what our goals and outcomes. And one thing that I want to mention to the committee, I was fortunate to serve on Kirk Carlson's commission, Economic Recovery Commission on Tourism, in the late 80s as part of Governor Perpich's promotion and development of tourism. And Mr. Carlson made a comment. He said, if you can't measure it, it isn't worth doing. And I think the board members on our board, many business people, you know, subscribe to that philosophy. And so we've always recorded our activity at, like, the sports facility, National Sports Center in Blaine, and the other facilities every year, where we record two basic measurements. Now, first of all, you can see that there's been a number of facilities funded through the legislature that are part of the state's amateur sports network, from the National Sports Center in Blaine down to the Cup in Bloomington. Every year, we survey all the facilities and we say, how many participants and visitors did you have? And the chart below shows that when the Amateur Sports Commission was founded in the late 80s, how as facilities came online, the visitorship to these facilities has grown. More importantly, if you look at the next page, what the legislature has always been interested in is, okay, we have these two goals. We know if we build a great sports facility, Minnesotans would benefit, but how would that affect our economy? So every year we do formal instruments, survey all the facilities, and we say, when you had a soccer tournament or a hockey tournament and you had 50 teams, how many teams came from out of state? And this measurement here is only measuring the out-of-state visitors. And we are blessed. There's a number of tourism activity, to use a fictitious event, if there was a Hopkins Strawberry Festival and they had 10,000 people show up for it, very hard to know how many people are local and how many people came from out of town. But I want all the members to know around the table, when we present this data, it's empirical. For example, like the USA Cup soccer tournament in Blaine has 1,000 teams, and they all register with us. So if there's a team from Brooklyn Park, we know who they are. If there's a team from Iowa, a team from Michigan, and then we know how many kids are on the roster, and we often know how many parents accompanied them. So the data that you see here is empirical. It's not guesstimations or estimations. It's based on actual numbers of participants who come from out of state and are spending time in Minnesota. There's been two studies independent of the Amateur Sports Commission who evaluated our data that if your staff are interested we can provide that show that our numbers are very conservative and accurate. So, Madam Chair, if you consider the state has made a significant investment in amateur sports, and then you consider that over 5 million people, many of them Minnesotans, many outstate, experience these facilities, and that $70 million of economic impact comes into Minnesota every year, that the investment has been a very good investment. And that brings you up to the next page, page number 6. As a general view on this investment, we are receiving the page that has the dollar bills on it. If you look at $70 million, the top dollar there, every year is coming from out of state. That's not a Rochester dollar spent in Minneapolis. That's a Michigan or a Texas or a California dollar. And conservatively, most of that activity is sales tax applicable. Hotels, restaurants, and if you apply the sales tax of $4.3 million to that impact, and then if you look at the state's total investment, you've invested, since 1997, $50 million of state bonding in those facilities listed. Last year we asked what the estimate of servicing the principal and interest on those bonds. It's approximately just under $3.8 million. So that the state gets a net benefit. There's $66 million that's spent throughout Minnesota, and there's a $500K, you could say, surplus, and the only thing left is the Amateur Sports Commission appropriation. So we would say that there's ample dollars. Now, we wouldn't be before you, Madam Chair, if we collected that money ourselves. But because it goes into the state coffers in a general sense, that we can only demonstrate to you by these studies that it's real. And we also believe that the converse is true, that if the agency was somehow diminished or eliminated, this benefit would start to fade. So we feel very good. It's a great story to tell. Now, the next section is on the National Sports Center. When the legislature and the governor envisioned this network of amateur sports facilities, there were some who said that the Amateur Sports Commission should manage a system of facilities that we would own and operate as state facilities. At that time, I think Roger Moe feared that there would be another state university system, which would be impossible to stop at the legislature. So there was sort of a feeling that all the facilities should be delegated to cities and counties, except for the state flagship facility in Blaine. So of those system of facilities, they're the only one that is owned and operated by the Amateur Sports Commission is Blaine. So that's an important distinction. Now, the thing that we should all be proud of, we believe it's the only state facility that was funded with state bond dollars that is not subsidized by the state. That since 1990, when it opened its doors, our agency has taken very seriously the goal of let's manage this without going for a city, county, or state appropriation to keep the lights on. And I want to point out, it's not been easy. The first year, there was a loss. There were layoffs. There was some, like $500,000 of debt. It was put on the books of the facility, and they paid it off over 3-4 years. And just a point of reference, I don't want to diss the Minnesota Zoo. They were created about a similar era, and they were sold to you as a legislature that it would bring in out-of-state visitors, and it would operate in the black. I think your annual subsidy to the zoo is $6 million. The nice thing about the National Sports Center, when you're in tough economic times, the facility really, you know, isn't prone to getting a major cut from the state so that it can offer its programs and services. And just so you know, 3 months ago, the National Sports Center, anticipating a little bit of a turndown, laid off 6 staff, and so they are acting responsibly to prepare for tougher economic times. Now, the two measurements of the National Sports Center are attendance, and you can see there the wonderful growth on attendance, and also in economic impact. Because the agency is based there, we spend a lot of our time making sure this facility operates in the black and produces the results that you expect. So the next page, Madam Chair, is Star of the North Games, and you can see there, starting in 1998 with the Larry Haas Star of the North Games in St. Cloud, to the present schedule. This year will be in St. Cloud and back to Rochester in 2010. Now, I want to point out, this is an event that's a benefit to Minnesota communities. Since all the participants are from Minnesota, this is not out-of-state money coming into Minnesota. But when St. Cloud or Rochester or Burnsville host the games, their hotels and restaurants receive the benefit. But we feel it's a good thing for our state to have a state annual Olympic Games, and that it's a very worthwhile thing for our state and for the community. Finally, I'm going to ask Joel Carlson to talk about things that differentiate our agency, I think, from most public agencies. We have accepted the notion that at some point in the future we should try to become self-sufficient, and we've had several initiatives, and Joel can comment to the first one, which there's hundreds of hours spent on it, and some of the other things that we've done. And I think Joel would have a perspective on self-sufficiency too, from the board member perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm glad Paul got our homework done, because I would have had to say that my dog ate it, because I wasn't going to be prepared with homework. But
everybody always has to do their homework.
I'm in tune to that now, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, my name is Joel Carlson. I own a government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I probably see most of you on some other business around the halls of the Capitol here. But I've been a member of the Amateur Sports Commission since 2003, and it has been an exciting opportunity for me to watch all of the good things that go on with kids at that facility in Blaine. And other facilities across the state. I can say that I've never been to the Ole Magset ski jump in Coleraine, but most of the other facilities I've tried to get to, and it is a dynamic organization that provides, I think, a great service to kids. Just as an aside, I also, as a volunteer, represent Minnesota hockey, so I get to blend a couple of my passions here, because the Sports Center in Blaine has the largest indoor hockey facility in the country. And when Paul talks about that facility and its 8 sheets running tournaments, it is amazing to see. We run the largest women's ice hockey tournament in the country, the Stick It to Cancer tournament, and we have a number of national events that are at that facility that are outstanding. And amateur hockey in Minnesota, by the way, has over 45,000 households participating in hockey in Minnesota. It is the largest amateur hockey association in the country, and we have over 13,000 girls participating in hockey in Minnesota, also the largest in the country. And so it is a fun thing to be involved with. And since 2003, if you look at the, I don't think it had anything to do with me being appointed to this particular board, but you'll see that our budget was almost cut in half. And we have struggled with that as a board on how to manage that loss of revenue to support the amateur sports mission of providing tournaments and opportunities. And one of the things that we've looked at is we have a very large campus in Blaine that was purchased with the foresight that this thing was going to grow. And we do have some land at the sports facility in Blaine that could be used for other purposes. And we approached the legislature in 2005 to give us the authority to enter into a lease arrangement with businesses that would maybe complement what the Amateur Sports Commission is doing in Blaine. If you've been out there, you'll know that it's developing now around Blaine, but many years ago there were no restaurants, there were no stores, there were no hotels. And we received authority from the legislature in the 2005 bonding bill to lease up to 16 acres of our land with the anticipation that if that is successful, it would reduce the state's outlay for our operating budget and provide a benefit to those that come to the National Sports Center. I can tell you, I've been involved in the sports mall committee since its inception, and it's been a particularly nettlesome process. Leasing state property is difficult. It's difficult for the developer. We had to come back and have the legislature amend the legislation to allow us to enter into a longer term lease because the third-year lease that we had originally received approval for was not long enough. And that, coupled with what everyone recognizes a very challenging development environment right now, has made that process very difficult for us to the point of not being able to report to you today that you can count on lease payments coming to the commission. And that has not been the result of a lack of effort or hard work. It's just been extremely difficult to do. And as we look at other opportunities to try and provide some self-sufficiency to the agency, we have limited opportunities. There are only so much you can charge in fees for teams and players to participate in your events. There's only so many expenses you can cut. We've got to keep the refrigerators going to keep that ice cold. One of the things we're looking at is putting in a wind turbine. And the estimates indicate that with a wind turbine, we could generate not only enough electricity to run all of the campus, but that we'd actually have some power left to sell back to the grid. So we're doing what we can to be self-sufficient, but the minor amount of money that we receive from the legislature to fund our three staff is critical to our mission, and we really appreciate the support of this committee as your budget develops and moves forward, that you'll consider that and what they do. It's amazing what three staff people can accomplish with that organization. So with that, Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you. Be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Wagenia.
When you're talking about the number C developed wind turbine at how far along are you in that process?
Madam Chair, members, I would say that is in its infancy. We've had one meeting with Great River Energy, and then I believe Paul had a meeting with Conexus just last week. So that is in its infancy. And we're open to say, ideas and suggestions as well.
I have...
Just 30
minutes. Mr. Carlson, have you, Mr. Erickson, have you discussed with any of the school districts that have wind turbines the results or problems that they've encountered?
Madam Chair, I can tell you I have not. Maybe Paul has had discussions. I can tell you I have not.
Mr. Erickson?
Madam Chair, we've had information from there's a new turbine at the Great River Energy headquarters in Maple Grove, and then there's another wind turbine in Elk River. And then with our relationship with the evolution of the Marshall Local Amateur Sports Commission, they've got some of the biggest resources there, and we've got a collection of data from those resources. And I'll just point out the one thing that I think people would find interesting. If we polled the maintenance staff at the National Sports Center, we said, is the National Sports Center in Blaine calm, mildly windy, or very windy? They said they'd all say it's extremely windy. But the facts are, in the United States, the two windiest locations are North Dakota and Texas, and Buffalo Ridge in Minnesota, and that's a zone 7. And I guess Buffalo Ridge is a zone 5. For wind strength, because your production is based on the power of the wind, and the Twin Cities or North Metro is in the 2 to 3 range. So that They get 40% efficiency in Buffalo Ridge, and it would look at 18 to 20%, which affects the payback and so on. But, you know, one thing that's been really rewarding, we had conversations with the city and the Airports Commission, and we were all a little in trepidation, would they be supportive? To our pleasant surprise, they, people, I think, want to invest in green, and a big wind turbine on the campus of the National Sports Center with the 5 million, 4 million visitors would really be a statement about where we need to go as a nation, and imagine healthy kids and families, boys and girls, recreating in the facilities powered by renewable energy. Just for a fun fact, too, the National Sports Center's annual energy bill is $1 billion, $650,000 in electricity alone to keep those 8 sheets in ice.
Say that again, please.
The energy bill for the National Sports Center in Blaine is $1 million a year. And the electricity part is $650,000, and the balance is gas. So it's a big number. So that's why our board has the foresight to say, hey, maybe if a wind turbine could make a big difference there, could there be some net revenue that would help you fund our agency? So we're, the other thing I just wanted to mention in this topic while we're on to close it out, you know, we were trying to hit a home run leasing 16 acres to achieve $300,000 a year in annual lease payments. We may have to try to hit singles because of the economic condition. And so one thought, just as the state capitol has a private restaurateur, many state parks have a private bicycle rental. There are some other options at the sports center, because it's a huge campus, you know, 600 some acres, that should we lease small parcels for small private entities that would make $30,000 or $40,000 lease payments, so we could attack the budget of the National Sports Center in more incremental pieces. But we're still hopeful on the sports mall, but as Joel said, with the economic conditions, it's not likely anytime soon with the locking up of finances.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for that last point, just an observation, the newspaper tells us that hockey is now moving outdoors again, and hearing that energy bill, you can maybe understand why we're beginning to understand the charms of playing hockey outdoors. Your transition to the leasing issue was maybe a beginning of an answer to my question, whether we need to revisit that 2005 thought. And I mean, one of the things I think we're aware of beyond the economic conditions, there was a time when developers moved out, and as a number of vacant housing developments show us, there's beginning to be some turnaround, and whether we ought to rethink that part of the strategic plan.
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative Hoffman, I think you're right on. I think, you know, we see that there will be a turnaround, and there may be actually opportunities as, you know, as there's the turnaround. The problem right now is, you know, when you, and I give a lot of credit to people, and we have, I've been hundreds of hours of meeting with these developers, and as the economic conditions, you know, worsen, you know, the challenge to put it together and to try to change the agreements to accommodate, it's so frustrating. So I think in our report to the chairs, Murphy and Betzel, we said that we don't anticipate lease payments in the next 2 years, but actually the city, the county, and ourselves are quite bullish for 2011 and 12 because of the general, you know, development seen in Blaine and the North Metro.
And then, Madam Chair, Representative House, because I'm assuming this committee will ultimately be one that that looks at bonding requests and makes recommendations to us, I would like Mr. Erickson to give you a little bit of history about one particular line item veto that I think it is important for this committee to understand the history of, and that is the Rochester Center. If you would give them the brief history about sort of an unfinished project there and what the background of that is. Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, the The state invested in a world-class volleyball center in Rochester in the middle 90s, and it is an outstanding facility, and it has been used as a regional and national facility for volleyball training and tournaments. The original appropriation didn't do all the job. We need some facilities to complement the good work that has been done there with locker rooms and meeting space that currently does not exist. It has been our number one capital priority for the Amateur Sports Commission for all of my tenure, and we'd really like to get rid of that one. It was in the bill and vetoed by Governor Ventura, and it just hasn't gotten across the goal line. And if we want to fully utilize that as an Olympic training facility, which was in its vision, and we'd really like to see that one knocked off. I think they can finish the job. I think the request was somewhere between $2 and $3 million, and we'd love to see that one get knocked off. And we've been knocking on the door, and everyone's been great about it, but we'd really like to get
and
that.
And, Madam Chair, I was actually looking for some older history than that, and maybe Mr. Erickson doesn't remember telling us about I think it goes back to the Purpich administration when Rochester did in fact follow through on what they believed was the state's vision. That was the piece of history I was sort of looking for.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, I think what a piece of information that predates Commissioner Carlson is that Purpich had this idea. When you think about it, looking back, he recognized that the Twin Cities is always going to be the natural magnet for most tourism and economic activity. So he said, if we have an amateur sports commission, it shouldn't be the Metropolitan Amateur Sports Commission, like, you know, the agency that governs the Dome, it should be the Minnesota. And so in 1987, the state was kind of carved up with designations that Bowabic would have the skiing, biathlon, soccer and Blaine, swimming at the U, and Rochester was designated as volleyball. And I think the problem that ensued is the original request was like 3.5, and the appropriation was 2.1 or 2.2. And so literally, they got their courts, but they cut the locker rooms and the restrooms. And the great news, bad news about the National Volleyball Center in Rochester, they get a lot of big events. That's the great news. But if you go down there, especially the women's and girls' locker rooms, there are lines during their weekend events of people standing in line to go to the restroom. And so the expansion solves that and actually, you know, really makes it what it should be. And we all would have saved a lot of money if just appropriated that extra million 7-8 years ago. But now I believe the request is $3 to $4 million, which is there.
Representative Ergo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps Mr. Carlson can lean on one of his hockey playing buddies a little bit more on that one.
I've tried, Representative Ergo. I've tried.
Mr. Erickson, even though I'm on the committee, if you'd answer, did you get any bonding dollars in the last go-around for your facilities? I know we visited some places.
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl. We were extremely successful with you, the legislature, and we had 6 projects approved last session, and all 6 projects were vetoed. And our volleyball was one of the ones that was approved, as well as others. And so we are going to try to be more convincing to the administration in the next funding cycle so that we can complement your work with the executive branch support.
And just one other point, just a question. The event in St. Cloud, is that officially known as the Larry Haas North Star Games, or do we need to do that legislatively?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, if we go to his office, I'm told there's a nice big plaque recognizing his leadership of bringing the first event, our first state Olympic Games to St. Cloud, first official event.
Madam Chair. I would like to say in the evolution of things, in 1988, I placed first in the long jump and second in the 100-meter dash, and now they would use a calendar to time me.
Representative Lee. Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of years ago, I was blessed with being able to join Phyllis Kahn and some of these two testifiers, and I see a couple in the crowd get together on Sunday nights and play hockey. And out of that, we were able to go to the breast cancer event at the Blaine Center. The whole group went and played in the tournament. And I lost my mom to breast cancer, and I really have a special place in my heart for that fundraising effort. But it was really neat, and it was really quite odd. Also, at the same time, they dyed all the rinks pink, so the ice was pink. And I don't know if you ever skated on pink ice. It's just really quite an interesting life experience, but it was great. I just wonder if the testifier, Mr. Carlson, is quite a good hockey player, and it took me 2 years to finally do something this week. I wonder if you would recognize that publicly, what I finally was able to do for him, rather.
Well, there's a saying at Sunday Night Hockey that I violate the gift ban repeatedly by passing the puck to Representative Lilly so he can score goals. But he actually passed one to me on Sunday night, the first time in years, and I did the job for him. So he was pretty proud of that.
Took a lot.
How many? Were there any complaints about the pink ice from women, Representative Lilly?
I don't think there was any complaints about it. I think there was... I think everybody was really pretty fired up about the event and happy to be there.
Representative Loeffler.
Thanks. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Erickson. And these tough economic times, I know economic development's tough for the best pros, and it sounds like you guys are pros at running amateur sports. Maybe I think it might be time for you to rethink whether or not this is the right strategy to become self-supporting. And part of my thought on that was we heard from the Kansas City auditor, who's done 10 studies on what works and what doesn't in economic development, and they had a very successful economic development project surrounding a racetrack. And what they found was that almost all the economic growth was at the expense of the surrounding counties, that there really was almost no net growth. And so if you're stumbling on this idea and initiative, maybe it's time for us to think about, you know, some other strategies. And I'm not sure if my math is right, but I think if you have 4 million visitors a year to the Blaine Sports Center for, you know, a $270,000 budget, I think that's less than 10 cents a person. And I want to make things affordable, but I mean, it might be more effective at looking at those kind of strategies or better selling of concessions or something than to try and do economic development in this kind of a tough market.
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, you know, we didn't just say, hey, well, there's some vacant land, let's try and lease it out to somebody. We approach that because there is a market need in Blaine for the types of businesses that we are hoping to attract there. And so it wasn't just, okay, here's a way to backfill our budget. I mean, we know that there... I participated in a tournament during the summer where the Select Series tournament where kids are staying in Burnsville for their tournaments in Blaine. We know that we have needs in the area that currently aren't being met. And so I agree that we can that we need and can look at other alternatives. But the lease arrangement was intended with a specific purpose to fill a need that would complement the activities at the amateur sports facility. And so it may not be successful, and we may need to look elsewhere, but it wasn't just a way to generate revenue. It was intended to complement what goes on at the sports center. And just one follow-up, Madam Chair, on the pink ice. Since the inception of that Stick at the Cancer tournament, I've served on the committee with the women that organized that tournament, and they were ecstatic about the pink ice.
What I was thinking. Representative, Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, I think Representative Loftus brings up a very good point that several people in our history have made the same, draw the same conclusion. They said, you know, the National Sports Center has a lot of people, a lot of activity. If we just adjusted fees slightly, we could just fund the agency. And that question was studied by the Department of Administration Management Analysis Division, I believe 4 or 5 years ago, where they came out and did this exhaustive analysis. Could the NSC charge more for their participants and create the net revenue? And the conclusion was you couldn't do it. And the reason is this. We put pressure on the National Sports Center to charge as much as they possibly can to achieve the goal of operating in the black, and they are doing another service for you folks. Think about that. Facility opened in 1989. Have you ever seen the served on committees CAFRA dollars or other money being spent on the facility? We have said that the facility will pay its operating costs, and it does its short-term 5 to 7, 10-year maintenance. If an air conditioning unit goes out, they pay for that on the operating budget. And so it's sort of like the facility can walk, it can run, but it can't fly. It can't produce that additional net revenue. We have put pressure on that board and that facility since its inception to create net revenue. And over 20 years on its budget, the average margin is around 60, 70 grand. And they probably should be producing $100,000 in order to keep the place up. So it's a very good question. Commissioner McElroy came to that conclusion. He said, well, just charge everybody like a buck more. But and I'm glad you asked it, because if the committee staff would like to provide a copy of that report, which really brings that topic to a closure.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carlson, Mr. Erickson. We appreciate you sharing your knowledge of and your statistics of the Amateur Sports Commission with us. You will be back before us, I assume, in a few weeks. In the meantime, think about developing a plan to have gender equity on your gender balance on your board of directors. Thank you so much.
Noted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members of the committee, the minutes of the previous meeting are before you. This is Representative Morgan.
I move the minutes of January 12th.
Be adopted as printed.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Are there any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor of the Morgan motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. The chair would like to note that there were two reports due to this committee on January 15th, one from the Minnesota Zoological Society and one from the Minnesota Historical Society about their asset preservation projects, and we received those reports on the 15th. Today, one of our accounts is the libraries, and today the Legislative Research Library turns 40, or at least they're commemorating the 40th anniversary today between 3 and 5. Former librarians will be there, and you all, everyone in the building is invited to come and I think have a piece of cake. Today also Mr. Chen is ready to collect any assignments that people have done. Inadvertently said that they were due today when really they're due next Monday at the meeting. Both the photo, the assignment 2 with your photo, where you're doing fun things in the environment and heritage and legacy and so forth, and willing to share that photo with us. And the assignment number one, where everyone was supposed to talk to three people, from 18 to 35, one person from 35 to 60, and one person from 61 to any age they happen to be living at, over 61, and talk to them about, why did you vote yes on the constitutional amendment? What are your expectations, and what differences do you expect to see in the future? Representative Houseman.
Madam Chair, for those two reports that you received, are those going to be distributed to members of the committee at the preservation report?
They can be. If somebody wants them, I didn't know. Representative, just let Mr. Chen know that you need a copy if you wish it. The second item on our agenda today, the overview of organizations, we invite the Humanities Commission to come, and I understand Mr. Romanstein and Dr. Lannegren. And the Humanities Commission has a little bit different focus and purpose and a different way of being funded also. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning to you and to members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning about the work of the Minnesota Humanities Center. I'm Stanley Romanstein, and I am very proud to be the president of the Minnesota Humanities Center. Imagine, if you will, for just a moment, Minnesota as a place without books, a place without literature, things that people read. Imagine a Minnesota without F. Scott Fitzgerald, or Sinclair Lewis, or Louise Erdrich, or Garrison Keillor, or Kate DiCamillo, Thomas Friedman. A Minnesota without books is a place without need of book clubs, or libraries, or reading circles, or for that matter, even bookstores. And imagine, if you will, for a moment, Minnesotans as people who are completely ignorant of history. All history. National history, state history, local history, even family histories. And continue to imagine Minnesota as a place that's populated by people who have absolutely no understanding of geography. People who really cannot distinguish the Mississippi River's bluffs from the mountains of the Iron Range. And finally, imagine Minnesota as a place in which people have absolutely no understanding about how government works and about their responsibilities as citizens. No city councils then, no county commissioners, no elected officials, because people have no concept about voting or elections or constitutions or laws. I see from the smiles on your faces that it's just impossible to imagine Minnesota as that kind of place. Minnesotans love books. Annually, Minnesotans buy and read more books than any state in the Union. And when we're not reading, it seems like we're talking almost constantly about history. Oh, now my grandfather came over from a boat, from Norway back in the summer of 1890. Or, oh yes, I remember the Armistice Day blizzard. Now that was one real storm. Or, no, this isn't the first time we've dealt with a contested statewide election. You remember Elmer Anderson and Karl Rolvaag, don't you? As Minnesotans, we take a lot of pride in our history. We take a lot of pride in our state's very geography, almost as much pride as we take in the number of people who show up every time there's election and cast their vote in a voting booth because they understand that it's their civic duty. It's their responsibility. Collectively, these things that you've just thought about, literature, history, geography, civics, along with languages and social studies, jurisprudence, ethics, poetry, philosophy, and the arts, are the humanities. They are those things that we as Minnesotans prize. They are those areas of study and learning that we ask our children and our grandchildren to spend 12 formative years mastering, along with science and math. If humanities is not a term that you can quickly and easily identify or define, you're not alone. Our late Governor Elmer Anderson once said to me, "Stanley, Minnesotans love the humanities. They just don't always know to call them that." Not to worry. You can refer to the humanities individually or collectively. Just know that Minnesotans understand the fundamental importance of the humanities, even if the dictionary definition of that word might elude them. And if you're not familiar with the work of the Minnesota Humanities Center, also, not to worry, many of you who have been members of the legislature will know us as the agency charged by the legislature in 2008 with creating and coordinating the process that led to Governor Pawlenty's naming Robert Bly as our state's first poet laureate. The legislature asked us to handle that assignment because poetry is one of the humanities, yes. But the legislature asked us to accept that responsibility because the Humanities Center has a statewide reach and because the Humanities Center is highly respected both in Minnesota and across the country for the quality and the integrity of its work. The Minnesota Humanities Center is a nonprofit organization. We're a 501c3, created in 1971 and charged by the Minnesota State Legislature with using the humanities to create a thoughtful, literate, and engaged society. A thoughtful, literate, and engaged society here in Minnesota. Not a small charge. So how do we fulfill that mission? Four ways. One, we work directly with K-12 educators, schools, and school districts to improve student achievement and to close that much talked about achievement gap between underprivileged students and their classmates by creating rigorous professional development opportunities that transform teaching and engage students. The positive impact of our work has been documented by Minnesota's own Wilder Research Center and has brought us national recognition. Second, we create unique educational resources, books, podcasts, documentaries, DVDs, online learning opportunities that strengthen literacy, particularly within Minnesota's underserved communities, immigrant, African American, and American Indian. Third, through our national partnerships with the Smithsonian, the Library of Congress, and the National Endowment for the Humanities, we strengthen the work of dozens of other cultural organizations, local historical societies, libraries, community centers, learning and retirement organizations that are spread across our state and in greater Minnesota in particular. As one example, in the current biennium, because of our ability to bring the resources of the Smithsonian to Minnesota, more than 20,000 people visited local history museums and exhibits in places like Roseau, Wasika, Winona, and at Iron World. While they were there, they had the opportunity to think about and talk about local, state, national history and culture, about who we are as Minnesotans. But they also ate in local restaurants, and they bought gas and sent dollars in those communities. And fourth, we use state dollars to leverage significant investments by local, state, and national funders, including the Cargill Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Now, that's all well and good, you might say, but the state of Minnesota, as we all know, is facing a record-breaking budget deficit, and you are charged with making painful and difficult decisions about how scarce dollars would be allocated. Why should you vote in favor of funding the work of the Minnesota Humanities Center? In 2007, the legislature appropriated $500,000, $250,000 in each year of the biennium, in general support for the Humanities Center's work. We took seriously the challenge to use those dollars wisely, and I'm pleased to report to you that the Humanities Center returned $7.1 million on the state's $500,000 investment in our work. That's a return of more than $14 in leveraged dollars and in new dollars for every $1 we receive from the state of Minnesota. I would refer you to this handout, which we distributed, that details some of the economic impact of our work and talks in detail about some of our programs, including Building America workshops, part of our professional development work with teachers, Somali folktale books, part of our creation of unique educational resources, and our community partnerships. And I'd be glad to answer any questions that you have about those.
Please.
There is a second handout that we've distributed. The strong economic impact of our work is not coincidental. The Humanities Center's work is guided by a 28-member board of directors that comes from the breadth and depth of Minnesota. Our directors, all volunteers, are business people, they are educators, concerned citizens from across the state who work hand-in-hand with our staff to ensure that the Humanities Center's work is making a positive and measurable difference in the lives of Minnesotans of every age and at every stage of life. Our board is concerned about economic development and about the difference that our work makes in the lives of Minnesotans. The staff with which our board works includes 15 full-time and 7 part-time employees. I distributed the staff distributed a copy of our organizational chart that details our staff and who does what. Like our board, our staff is concerned with economic impact and with making sure that our work is making a difference in the lives of Minnesotans. Our operating budget for 2009, which you'll find on the reverse of that page, totals $3.2 million. We've given to you in very simple pie chart form, and I'd be glad to provide detail about these appropriations or about the budget. Our budget is $3.2 million. Our revenue, 13% comes from the state of Minnesota, 18% from the federal government through the National Endowment for the Humanities, 18% is earned income, fees from programs, services, the sale of books, and 51% is contributed income. I cannot emphasize enough that the investment from the state of Minnesota is what makes it possible for us to leverage contributions from private and public funders. You can also see our budgeted expenses for the year. I will tell you that our management in general includes fundraising, communications, and everything that goes to support the program work of the Humanities Center. Again, the state of Minnesota is facing difficult choices, so why should you vote to support our work? 3 reasons. Economic impact, first and foremost, is evaluated and measured by return on investment. The current biennial investment in the Humanities Center, we generated a return of $14 for every $1 we received from the state. We're a solid bet. We deliver returns. Second, we deliver not only in economic terms, but we also deliver in ways that Minnesotans care about and care about deeply. Call it quality of life. We improve student achievement. We prepare Minnesotans kids for life and for work in the 21st century by equipping their teachers with the knowledge that they need. We create unique educational resources that strengthen academic achievement in Minnesota, and we give particular attention to the state's underserved communities, immigrants, African-American kids, and American Indian students. And we work with literally dozens of other cultural organizations, local historical societies, libraries, community centers throughout the state, throughout your districts. And finally, we use the dollars that you invest in us to leverage grants from individuals, corporations, foundations, both public and private. Our funders have told us very clearly that without a significant investment from the state of Minnesota, their contributions to us are in jeopardy and may disappear altogether. That could mean certainly a loss of revenue for the Humanities Center, but also jobs that Minnesota simply cannot afford right now. We need your support if we are to command support from others. I have asked my colleague David Lanigan, professor of geography at McAllister College and a frequent collaborator with the Humanities Center, to speak for a few moments about his firsthand experience with our work and about its economic impact. When Dr. Lanigan has finished, both he and I would be more than happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, Professor Landgren.
Thank you very much. Again, my name is David Landgren. I'm a professor of geography at McAllister College. I also coordinate the Minnesota Alliance for Geographic Education. I have actually worked with the commission and the center under its two names since the 1970s. And in all my activities with them, I focus primarily on teacher education, professional development of in-service teachers. The Minnesota Alliance for Geographic Education is funded by the National Geographic Society, and so by aligning these two groups, we get greater leverage. We leverage their money. They leverage our money. And we're able to provide specialized training in the center in St. Paul, which we could not do on our own. We don't have any center like that at all. This is a group of volunteer teachers. So we're able to provide two-day workshops for teachers from across the state rather than just teachers here in the Twin Cities. I don't argue that that has an economic impact in the way that Kirk Carlson would like to measure it, but it certainly has an impact on the state's equity, the intellectual equity, and the training of the students that will carry the state forward. However, I've also been involved in a major project with the center funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities on the Iron Range. And last summer we had 50 teachers on the Iron Range twice, teachers from across the country. We spent approximately $200,000 on the Iron Range, staying in the hotels, eating in the restaurants, and engaging with the history and future of the Iron Range and exposing that area to the United States as a whole. So that's very direct investment, as well as the intellectual equity that's created by the training or professional development that occurs there. And then finally, I'm also the state scholar for the upcoming Museum on Main Street program that's provided by the Smithsonian, and it'll travel to six communities across the state. Again, I'm not going to argue with you that that's going to create new jobs in the state. It's certainly bringing national money into the state. It's providing a national level exhibit for communities that would otherwise not be able to avail themselves to such resources. So I think when you consider the investment, you certainly have the dollar back that people are looking for. But there's also tremendous intellectual equity that is increased by the activities of the center. And the Minnesota Alliance for Geographic Education is only one of the organizations they work with, so we're only one of the levers that they're able to use to extend the reach of the state dollars. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Before the committee's questions, the Humanities Center, is that different than the Humanities Commission?
Madam Chair, thank you for your question. When we were created in 1971, we were named the Minnesota Humanities Commission. We changed our name to the Minnesota Humanities Center 2 years ago, and we did so because we wanted to communicate to people that we were permanent, that we were here to stay, and that we were going to be around to work with Minnesotans on into the future. Quite often people hear the word commission and think that it is something that is temporary. Commissions convene, they issue a white paper, and they go out of business. And we also wanted to emphasize that we do have a physical presence in the state of Minnesota. The Humanities Education Center is located on the east side of St. Paul. There's information about it in the little blue box on your handout. And we wanted to emphasize that place. It is a facility that was renovated with state dollars, with bonding dollars, to which we added private dollars as well as federal dollars. But we did change our name officially 2 years ago.
And
thank you.
Mr. Shepard, has that been changed in statute?
Madam Chair, I'd have to check, but I don't know that the Humanities Commission has been referenced in session laws providing funding. I don't know that it is referenced in statute or not.
Madam Chair, we are referenced in statute. We are referenced in statute. We were in the 2003 session. Our complete appropriation from the state of Minnesota, which at that time was $2 million, over the biennium was first unallotted and then stricken from the state budget. And at that time, our statutory authority was deleted. But in the next session, our statutory authority, in 2005, our statutory authority was renewed. So I know, and I can find the citation and statute.
Okay. And we better check that and to see if we need some time to change the wording then from Humanities Commission to Humanities Center then. You officially changed it within your 28-member board and
Madam
forevermore
Chair.
It was supposed to be called the Humanities Center.
Madam Chair, we did, and we filed paperwork with the Attorney General and the IRS and other organizations.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. And then at a later time, if you could supply to us the 13% state funding, a breakdown of what that buys us. Representative Erdahl and then Howson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I'd like to commend you for stimulating understanding through literature and books. I think it's very important that people read particularly historical fiction about Minnesota.
Any examples?
Now, that said, did you have any involvement in the sesquicentennial?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, we did have involvement in the Minnesota sesquicentennial. In particular, we created a website called Native Responses to Statehood. We felt it was important that members of the Ojibwe and Dakota communities have a chance to talk about statehood and what it means in their lives. And we created a website that has gotten lots of national recognition and lots of national praise for adding to the breadth of the story about Minnesota.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more question. As you probably are aware, in 2012, we have the sesquicentennial of the Dakota Conflict of 1862 mm-hmm. approaching. And in light of what you just said, I think it's very important because there are wounds still open from that 1862 conflict that you do something along similar lines or even more to help with, again, understanding of the event of 1862. So I would encourage you to do that and to be prepared as we near closer to that date.
Dr. Roman,
Madam Chair, Representative Rowell, thank you. I'll make sure that we do.
Representative Husman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is the contributed income primarily foundation grants or private donors?
Dr. Roman.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, the lion's share at this point is foundations and corporations, but we do receive a growing base of support from individual donors. We recognize the need after the 2003 budget debacle in our terms. We lost at that time a third of our operating budget. And we said at that time we want to make sure that we're not in that position again, and then in order to protect our future and our service to Minnesotans, we need to make sure that we are steadily growing our base of individual donors. At that time, our base of individual donors was around 50. Now it's around 400. So we're making steady progress in that. It's a hard time for individuals, as you know, but there is a growing base of support there.
But the dollar amount is primarily foundation and corporate grants.
Yes.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam.
Sorry.
Too many first names. To the gentleman here, you made a statement that if there's cuts from the state, that your private fundraising goes down. Isn't it generally the opposite? I mean, I'm wondering about your donors here, because normally if you get cuts, you go to your donors and they give more. What you mentioned that if there's dollars cut from the state, that your private fundraising would also go down.
Madam Chair, what we are hearing from our donors, first, for any federal dollars that we receive, a one-to-one match for those. And we have always counted on state support as the first dollars in to match federal dollars and to release federal dollars. Second, what we have always stressed to our donors is that we are always involved in public-private partnerships. I referenced the acquisition of the Humanities Education Center on the east side of St. Paul in 1994. The state was first in, and we used those state dollars to leverage private dollars and federal dollars. What our longtime funders have said to us is, we count on that public-private partnership. If the public's not there, why should the private sector step in to pick up all of the responsibility? So we're not hearing, oh, the state's in a difficult time, we'll do it. We're hearing, you know, if the state's not really interested in this, why should the private sector step forward?
And how in, I suppose, 2007's your last amount, what amount of federal dollars came to the Humanities Center in 2007?
Madam Chair, in 2007, we received a base operating appropriation from the National Endowment for the Humanities, federal funds totaling $585,000. And I can tell you, because we're just dealing this with Congress, that amount of money, that base operating grant, has been static since 1996. It's been at $586,000, and it's been set at that level since 1996.
When Governor Plenty was talking about unallotting in December, did he look at the Humanities Center for unallotment?
Madam Chair, I don't know if we were looked at, but we did not receive a cut in that process. We did in 2003. We were unallotted immediately, but not in this round.
Okay. And then were you asked to prepare for a 10% cut on allotment?
Madam Chair, we were asked to prepare for at least a 10% reduction. Yes.
And if there's any other funding money or funding information that you think from our questions and so forth would be helpful to us, will you supply that to us in the future?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on anything? Any questions? If not, this meeting is adjourned.